Hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views from our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Now, I've made this point before, and I'll make it again. We in the patriotic movement, and others, Christian conservatives, traditionalists, any of the people who are being persecuted on the social media, by being banned from Twitter or banned or put in Facebook jail. Or have their channels taken down from YouTube, it's time to strike back. Now, I know it's not going to be easy or quick, but there is somebody in the White House who I think is sympathetic. In fact, he's already made helpful comments about the banning and persecution of conservative thought. From places like YouTube and Twitter and so on. I'm hoping that someday, and I don't wish harm to President Trump, but I hope Twitter actually goes over the top and bans him. And he then can tell his millions of followers, I'm moving to Gab. And that's what we have to do. I don't think it's an either-or situation, but I think increasingly we must support the alternative, more relatively free platforms like Gab, and for videos, BitChute, and so on. And there are others. This is not an exclusive list. First of all, we must do that for self-preservation. Hopefully, the time will come when they are built up sufficiently that they can they will rival Facebook and Twitter and so on. That's sort of step number one. But step number two, we have to start demanding, talking about it, first of all, and then demanding the legislation to force these virtual monopolies, and they are virtual monopolies, to serve everybody. Now, this goes back to antitrust legislation during the Progressive Era at the beginning of the 20th century. Now, I'm a free enterpriser, and in a general sense, I believe you should be able to serve whomever you want in a business. But, of course, you can't. There are anti-discrimination laws. For instance, if I run a restaurant, I cannot say, oh, well, yeah, but I won't serve you because you're black, or I won't serve you because you're a raging homosexual. You'll do that type of thing and you've got mega problems. Okay, while I may not agree with such anti-discriminatory legislation, there usually with outfits like restaurants, there's always an alternative. If you don't want to eat at my diner, you could go to Rufus's diner down the road and get a meal. And so, actually, I don't believe in anti-discrimination legislation. But the anti-monopoly legislation is a little bit different. It recognized that some companies have a virtual monopoly, so they are able to basically blacklist people. And refuse them service. And that's what we have to invoke. Outfits like Facebook and Google and YouTube and Twitter are so big, and they have at this time such a monopoly. They should be treated like public utilities, and public utilities generally have a monopoly or near monopoly in a given area. So your local hydroelectrical company has a virtual monopoly. There usually isn't competition. The same goes for in most cases the delivery of your gas that you may use it for fuel, So the public utilities are required to serve you, to sell to you, as long as you can pay. They can't say, well, I'm not selling to you because you are a Bible-believing Christian, or I will not sell to you because you're an Odinist or a pagan, or I will not sell to you because, you're conservative or you're liberal or whatever. Then the same thing has to be done with Facebook, Twitter, PayPal, these big monopolies. Now, someone say, well, you don't actually have to pay for them. Well, except for PayPal, they get a chunk of the change. But no, the technology is different. We Facebook and Twitter, etc., exploit us. If you're a user, yes, you get to use for free. But they're not doing that because they want to help you or because they're benevolent. They make megabucks. Well, how did they do that? Well, you are studied as a user, and your information is sold to their advertisers. Facebook, Twitter, etc., make buckets of money from selling access and advertising access to you. So so your participation is not some sort of generous, benevolent favor that they have granted you. You're their raw material. So with all that in mind, we should be demanding, and actually President Trump has mentioned this several times, but let's hope he can be motivated to mention it more and maybe to try to get some of this into legislation. Monopolies, communications monopolies, should be treated as public utilities and compelled to serve people without ideological or religious discrimination whatsoever. Of course, you're still responsible for what you write. Certainly you are in Canada. You know, if I were to write under my own name and advocate, let's say, the violence against a particular individual or whatever, I'm still responsible for that. But that's not a get-out-of-prison card by any means. But I'm responsible, as I should be. Well, anyway, all of this is kind of a long-winded introduction to a story, another outrage in today's National Post. Not that the Post is outrageous, but the story is. Twitter ban an omnicide, says advocate for free speech. Free speech advocate Lindsay Shepherd, she's a female, who was permanently banned from Twitter earlier this week, says the move underscores wider concerns that the firm has been overzealous in its censorship of right-leaning public figures. Well, she's being moderate in that. They are fanatics in their censorship. Shepherd, a former Wilfrid Laurier University teaching assistant turned free speech activist, said she was permanently banned from Twitter on Monday, likely in connection to comments in which she misgendered trans woman Jessica Yaniv on July 14th. Now, you practically need a translator to help you through this one. What is misgendering? Well, okay, I'll tell you. Misgendering means that you refuse to play in somebody else's mentally ill sandbox. You see, a transgendered thingy, a transgendered person is born a male but thinks he's a female, or vice versa, born a female and wants to be a male, and then says, I feel like a woman. Let's say the male says, I feel like a woman, and so now you must call me she or her, or sometimes some other made up pronoun like they. You have to call me they. No, well, no, I don't have to call you anything, bozo. If you present, you look to me like a male on the outside, I'm going to refer to you as he or him. If you look like a female, I'm going to refer to you as she or her. I don't have to play in your deluded sandbox. You know, similarly, if I think I'm Field Marshal Irvin Rommel, and I put on a long black leather coat, you don't have to call me Field Marshal. You don't have to call me General Rommel. That may be my imagination or whatever. You don't have to play in my sandbox, nor should we have to. However, for the specially privileged, sexually deluded, one does have, well, by law, at least, we think it's law. Certainly human rights law in British Columbia, something we're challenging, it would require you to use the pronoun of choice of the weirdo, sexually confused individual, or you're misgendering them. No, 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 I'm not misgendering them. They're mentally messed up. I'm calling it as I see it. Anyway, Lindsay Shepherd believes it had something to do with her misgendering, in other words, calling it as she saw it, about somebody called Jessica Yaniv. Now, a trans woman, I think, is a man who believes he's a woman. In an interview with the National Post, Shepherd said her banishment from the social media platform is the most recent example of the San Francisco-based company limiting the free expression of some users. Yeah, and this is what absolutely has to be fought. the story continues. The company said it is banning some users as part of a bid to stem online harassment. You mean opinions that some snowflakes don't like? Quote, because this is a trans individual, they are untouchable. Oh, this is Lindsay Shepherd says this. They are allowed to mock and taunt me about my biology. They can say whatever crude things they want, she said. But when it comes to me wanting to take a shot back, a bad person and wanting to stand up for myself or for my womanhood, so to speak, I'm permanently kicked off. And that's apparently what happened to her. And in Canada, she's relatively prominent and important. So the reign of censorship is ferocious. The decision by Twitter points to deepening anxieties over what some people view, well, many people view, as increasing restrictions on their right to voice unpopular or non-politically correct ideas. Debate has been going ongoing for years over whether private firms like Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram should be regulated in the same way traditional broadcasters are. The immense and growing influence of the platforms has caused even some market-oriented conservatives to mull over whether more government intervention is required to limit the power of the online behemoths. Shepard acknowledged that the private corporation is allowed to censor speech, sure, but I think it's a matter of looking at what they are censoring. Well, I wouldn't agree with her that far. I don't think they have the right to censor. They should have the right to censor speech because of their monopoly position. Yaniv, who describes itself, I'm not going to use her preferred or its preferred pronoun, on Twitter as an LGBTQ2SIA. You're mentally screwed up. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, queer, two-spirited, I, which could be inquiring, means you don't know what the heck you are, or intersex, and I'm not sure I know what that is, and A, I'm not sure what that is either. And a human rights activist, no, she's not, she's it's a fanatic, was not barred from the site after the spat. Canadian feminist writer Megan Murphy, who has criticized the LGBT, the transgender, was banned from Twitter after an online fight with Yaniv, and has tweeted comments like, men aren't women. Woo! Now she's banned for that. Yeah, she's a feminist, but I know my friend Brian Rue heard her not so long ago in Vancouver, and she made a lot of sense, and she has taken on the transgendered mafia and has suffered. She's been denounced as a false feminist, and she's been banned. And this gets ugly. And so she's banned from Twitter for what? What did Megan Murphy, a feminist, say that got her banned? She said, "Men aren't women." Elementary, my dear Watson. Of course, she's right. Men aren't women. Women aren't men. And vive la différence. We really are living in the Weimar Republic. The mentally diseased rule. Common sense is banned as some sort of atrocity. The fact is, when you lose the ability, to be quite crude, to know your ass from a hole in the ground, you will not long survive, and that's what worries me. When you cannot get the basics right, then you're not going to get more complicated things right. The exchange with Shepard began after Yaniv made comments about Shepard's female genitalia. It wasn't even that Shepard went after her. Shepard responded to her aggression. Shepard tweeted in response, "This is how men who haven't had functional romantic relationships speak, but I guess that's kind of what you are." Calling this Yaniv creature out for what it is. Namely, it's a male who thinks it's a female. Yaniv then responded with a comment that could have been in reference to Shepard's septate uterus, a reproductive condition that can cause higher rates of pregnancy loss. And I believe Shepard was pregnant, perhaps lost the child, I'm not sure. I heard at the hashtag Real Donald Trump, she said, I heard that hashtag Real Donald Trump is building a wall inside of your uterus, also known as your reproductive abnormality. Hopefully the walk works as intended. I think she means the wall works as intended. That's so cut through all the gibberish And what Yaniv, a particularly nasty creature, is saying, I hope you're infertile. Well, that's... I would agree she has the right to utter that opinion, but come on, that's not nice. At least I have a uterus, you fat, ugly man, Shepherd said. Of course, he thinks reproductive issues are something to be mocked. This is what Lindsay Shepherd tweeted, and woo! Game misconduct, she's out. Shepherd made international hot headlines after she was disciplined by Wilfrid Laurier University for showing students a televised clip of a debate featuring Professor Jordan Peterson, in which guests discussed the use of gender pronouns. Shepherd said the debate from TVO, that's Television Ontario's The Agenda with Steve Paikin, was shown as part of a class discussion about adding gender identity to the Canadian Human Rights Act, which is 2 years ago when Shepherd did this, which was really quite a hot issue then. Shepherd deleted her Twitter comments shortly after making them, saying that she knew Yaniv had successfully had other users banned in the past. She said she doesn't regret her comments, but said Twitter's decision could feed into the worsening divide between left and right. There's always these people who celebrate when someone is banned from a social media platform, she said. Your instinct should not be to celebrate when someone you don't like is vaporized, because you're not challenging your own ideas. You're facing any opposition in terms of an echo chamber. So actually, you know, a pretty mature approach by this young lady, Lindsay Shepherd, and once again a defeat for freedom of speech by one of these mega giants, monopolies, in this case Twitter. And that's why I do emphasize the importance of demanding legislation to force them not to discriminate on the basis of ideas. I was really delighted to see the rally in North Carolina on Wednesday night, where Donald Trump made reference to the four outrageous third world first term Congress thingies, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the others, and the crowd began to chant, send her back, send her back. And I think that's really, really good. And you know, people thanks to his leadership, are beginning to feel their own power. I think we should be able to argue this. I think we should be able to strike back against these mouthy, disgusting third world harridans. They're white haters. They oppose America. They oppose traditional America, and yet they've feasted off the generosity of America. Well, I think it's perfectly all right to say things like, if you don't like it, leave it. Go back to the backward shithole that your people, that you, or in the case of one of them, or in the case of Ocasio-Cortez, your parents fled. You left. You left these countries. You left your countries because they were failed states. You or your parents were so lucky to gain admission to a good country like the United States. You chose. Why would you criticize and attack the country that gave you shelter? You fled a failed state. Failed because of a failed culture. In the case of Islam, I would argue failed because of a failed religion, a backward, oppressive religion. Why would you dare defame the country you came to. Red China is a bully, an aggressive bully, pushing its agenda aggressively, very aggressively, in many parts of the world, including Canada. It's long been known that it has tried to use surrogates to infiltrate the political system. Of course, it's shamelessly stolen technological secrets, etc., in Canada. And well, what is particularly sad is we get people who are white, who are only too willing to slavishly push the agenda for communist China. Here is a good example. A t-shirt too far for boat festival. An Ottawa man is told to remove the Falun Gong t-shirt. Now, Falun Gong is a philosophy. It's not exactly a religion, but it's a peaceful philosophy that involves a Tai Chi and clean living. I think that's perhaps the best way to put it. And for some reason, it has absolutely driven the dictators, the communist dictatorship in China, bananas. They're not a political movement. They're not seeking to overthrow the communist regime. They are a disciplined, philosophical movement. But that poses, at least as they see it, that poses a terrible threat to the authority of the Communist Party. And their practitioners have been jailed. They've been tortured. They've actually been butchered. They're butchered for their organs. I mean, it's outrageous. And Falun Gong supporters regularly picket red Chinese embassies and consulates around the world. And I've seen them. I've seen them frequently in Vancouver and in Ottawa. It's a very silent protest, usually with a banner or two, handing out literature and praying. They're nonviolent. They're not tossing Molotov cocktails or anything like that. Anyway, there's a spiritual strength that seems to drive the tyrants in Peking absolutely bonkers. And also, Falun Gong publishes a regular newspaper that appears in many, many languages. And it's well worth taking a look at. Anyway, this is a story out of Ottawa, Canada. A Falun Gong practitioner says that the chief executive officer of Ottawa's Dragon Boat Festival, that's boats that look like Chinese boats, and I guess they have races, ordered him to take off a t-shirt advertising the Chinese spiritual group, citing in part Chinese sponsorship of the popular event. Now, this is a public park, incidentally. John Bruman also threatened to have other Falun Gong practitioners removed from the public park in which the festival took place last month if they didn't leave voluntarily, says Jerry Smith, a retired Nortel Networks employee. His allegations are the latest indication of Peking's low-profile campaign to influence Canadian society, even as the two countries remain locked in tense diplomatic standoff. Yeah, and using Canadians, white Canadians, to do their dirty work. The Chinese embassy in Ottawa is listed as a gold sponsor of the Tim Hortons Ottawa Dragon Boat Festival. So a sponsor, but this is actually the creature of Canada's leading coffee shop and donut at Tim Hortons, and I'm a shareholder. I'm going to be taking this up with management. But anyway, back to the story. The Ottawa's Dragon Boat Festival also receives funding from companies in federal, provincial, and city governments. So, as a federal, provincial taxpayer and citizen of Ottawa, this gentleman, Jerry Smith, was booted out or invited to leave at the risk of being booted out. an event that he was supporting through his taxpayers' money. If it had been the Chinese embassy, I would not have been surprised, Smith, 72, told Borman in a letter about the incident. But this is Canada, and Canadians should not be taking directions from the Chinese embassy. You're being used to do their dirty work of covering up horrific crimes. Neither the festival nor anybody else would talk to the National Post. But in responding to a letter of complaint from the Falun Gong, Bruman said he had a good exchange with Mr. Smith and simply stressed that he wanted to avoid politicizing the festival. So then that story continues. In the meantime, I would reiterate what I told Jerry, that we respectfully request that any organization not use an event for platform advocacy. Well, what T-shirt was the 72-year-old senior citizen wearing? It said Falun Dafa, which is another name for Falun Gong. It had some Chinese letters, and it had their website, www.falundafa.org. That's it. The newspaper put out by the Falun Gong in many, many languages is called Epoch Times, E-P-O-C-H, Times. It's not good on everything, but very good with it for inside information from China. Anyway, this is, I would think, is a completely non-controversial T-shirt. It doesn't even have slogans on it. But the Falun Gong is known for routinely demonstrating against China, Red China, outside the country's missions here and elsewhere. According to Smith's account, however, his encounter with Bruman June 22nd had nothing to do with advocacy. He said he and other Falun Gong practitioners were doing exercises, or I guess Tai Chi, an integral part of the group's practice, in city-owned Mooney Bay Park, but well outside the fenced-off area where the three-day festival was in Foley. So the festival had part of the park, and at another part of the park were the Falun Gong practitioners doing their exercises. At one point, his friend's son indicated he was hungry, so Smith took him on his own into the festival grounds, found a food concession, and bought him a veggie burger. After sitting down at a picnic table, a man seated nearby, who identified himself as Bruman, told him to remove his T-shirt, which contained the Latin script words Falun Dafa, another name for the group. And this is the slogan in Chinese: truthfulness, benevolence, forbearance. Doesn't exactly sound inflammatory to me, does it? But of course, the Red Chinese hate Falun Gong. Smith said he was taken aback, but did as he was told. In the discussion that ensued, he says he defended the Falun Gong group. Bruman, he says, recounted how he had visited China twice, that the Dragon Boat Festival was about celebrating the culture, and the Chinese embassy sponsored the event, which he said involved paying $1 million rent for the city park. I have trouble believing that, but okay. Gesturing to the walkie-talkie on his belt, Bruman also asked that Smith have his associates leave the park, though they were outside the fenced-in area, Mr. Smith. He said, I know your group is out there, and I can have them removed. I can just call and have them removed, recounted Smith, who says he started following Falun Gong after meeting a group of practitioners at Nortel, that was a big Canada tech firm, two decades ago. Think about the uppityness of this. Not only did the CEO for this Dragon Festival, who's white, want Mr. Smith to remove his T-shirt, which he did. I wouldn't have. But he wanted the rest of the Falun Gong folks who were exercising at another end of the park to leave, or he'd have them removed. Now, I don't know if he had the power to have them removed, but, you know, that's often the nature of a threat. It's not so much whether you can do it or not, it's you make the other guy think you can. But the outrageousness of this, it's a public park which they, as taxpayers, have paid for. Mr. Smith complained to the police, but he didn't get anywhere. Falun Gong representative Grace Wollensack said she had no doubt that the banning practitioners was a condition of the embassy's sponsorship. And she said the incident, though, was far from isolated. The Ottawa Tulip Festival, for instance, excluded a Falun Gong ban at the last minute back in 2008, noting that the Chinese embassy was involved in the event. A former Ottawa mayor refused to sign a proclamation honoring the group in 2010 after reportedly making a commitment to the Chinese officials on a trade visit. They're selling out Canadian values, Canadian principles, said Grace Wollensack. Because the Chinese embassy is doing this, it's eroding the freedom of our society. Yeah, I mean, here are Canadians taking directions from a foreign government. It's outrageous. Well, talk about outrageous. Pushy and Cheney Arye Bain. What's that when it's all? Well, it's a Orthodox Jewess, and she's running for the Conservative Party in a downtown Toronto riding. On Election Day, the most important date of this fall's federal campaign, Cheney Arye Bain, a Conservative candidate in Toronto, will not be able to call supporters, open her campaign office, send emails, or run the crucial get-out-the-vote ground game. Her opponents will be busy knocking on doors, emailing people, texting them, doing whatever they can to get people to the polls. Yale Bienenstock, one of Arye Bain's lawyers, said in court Tuesday. Ms. Bain won't be able to do any of that. Her entire campaign will be silent. The lights will literally be off. The current election date of October 21st falls on a Jewish holiday, although a more obscure one called Shemini Atzeret. Nonetheless, for Canada's estimated 75,000 Orthodox Jews, it's a significant impediment. They are to refrain from writing, traveling, using phones, and pretty much anything else a busy candidate or engaged voter would want to do on election day. Yeah, but it's their religion. Why must we accommodate them? But let's cut through all this dramatic whining and special pleading. It's election day, and because of there's apparently the very Orthodox Jews are not supposed to basically do anything on election day, on their religious holy day. She won't be able to call supporters, open her campaign office, send emails, or run the crucial get-out-the-vote ground game. If you've ever been involved in a major political campaign, and she's running for a major party, the candidate doesn't do that. You've got an election team. You've got a campaign manager who opens the election office, sends out emails, coordinates the get-out-the-vote campaign. These submissions would actually be made by a lawyer is an insult to the Canadian courts and should be absolutely rejected. Anyway, what the Jewess is trying to do is to get Canada to change the election day, or Elections Canada, rather, to change the election day to accommodate her and 75,000 other people who chose to come to Canada, knowing it was essentially a Christian country. And it's not as though she won't be able to vote. We have such a thing as advanced polls. So she doesn't have to vote on election day. There are all sorts of alternatives. What this is pushy. And as minorities get more and more bold, facing an establishment that usually collapses in face of any pressure, their demands just become more and more outrageous. Arye Bain is running in the Toronto riding of Eglinton, Eglinton Lawrence. And Ira Wallfish, a Jewish voter in Toronto, are asking the Federal Court of Canada to order the chief electoral officer who heads Elections Canada to push the election date back a week. Well, that would reduce the campaign. The stakes are high, said Colin Feasby, representing B'nai B'rith Canada, a Jewish advocacy group, anti-free speech group, incidentally, granted interview status of the case. At its heart, this is a case of what it means to count in Canadian society. holding the federal election on a date where a religious minority cannot vote by reason of their beliefs sends a message to the community that it does not count. Boo, hoo, hoo. Not the truth at all. If they, because of their weird religious beliefs, they can't stir outside their house and vote on election day, they're not prevented from voting. There are several advanced poll dates precisely to accommodate people who, for whatever reason, cannot make it on election day. Election Canada, that's the organization that runs the election, was accusing court of dismissing voting rights to save money, reduce workload, and to retain its arrangements already made with schools and school boards. So yes, to change things now, we're now the 18th of July, just 3 months away from the election day. It would be a colossal amount of worry, assuming it's even possible. Lawyers for Elections Canada dismissed accusations that the concerns of Jewish voters are being ignored, and that the decision to keep the election date was made without regard to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It was pointed out that there are numerous alternatives. If the question is voting on election day, there are numerous alternatives that would allow people who, for whatever reason, cannot or don't want to show up on election day, lets them vote. And the other boo-hoo-hoo part of this is, yeah, but she won't be able to campaign the way other people can. The candidate doesn't do all the campaigning. The candidate doesn't get out the vote, or any decent-sized campaign. You've got your campaign manager or election day team that does all that. The candidate does not have to be involved at all in that. Anyway, I believe the judge reserved, so we'll have to find out how that turns out. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. And I'm going to take my musical break right now. And here's a guy. I like him. He's a real zany character. Doug Kershaw, a great fiddle player. And this is one of his great hits, Diggy Diggy Low. This is Doug Kershaw, often called the Raging Cajun.
Here's a guy who speaks well for Cajun country, the Louisiana man himself, Mr. Doug Kershaw.
With every check, show them all, every glance.
Kershaw, Diggy Diggy Long, the Raging Cajun. And here's another song, Cajun. Or Acadian music, and this is Gail Menard, the back door with the group L'Angelus. D.L. Menard, and this is some more Cajun music. Hope you like it.
As a matter of fact, he's the one that influenced me to start playing music. And the back door that I'm about to sing for y'all, I took the idea of Honky Tonk Blues of Hank Williams. That's how the back door came about. And people's been telling me, you should write a song about the front door, he said, because in a house there's more or less have two doors. But I've been having trouble with it because over here...
Sometimes we're having a little bit of trouble with the feed. I'm still up in the mountains of British Columbia. So this may not be quite...
There's a lot of humidity. I've been having problem with the hinges. So that's why I didn't write it yet. Okay. We gotta play the back door.
Thank you.
time to talk to you. Listen to me when I talk to you. John, you still don't pay attention. I think I'm here.
This was
right over here.
This is D.L. Menard, and this is good old Cajun music. I hope you like this song here. This is one I think you will like. I certainly I certainly think it's one of the really good ones. This is a great entertainer from yesteryear, Grandpa Jones, and great man on the banjo, great performer. Really sorry that we lost him there about 15 years ago. And this is Grandpa Jones. And this is not Grandpa Jones. And I must confess, we have problems with the internet here, so my feed isn't quite what I'd like it to be. I'm going to see if I can call this up again. This is Grandpa Jones, and we'll try this a slightly different way. Scrolling down here, okay, let's try this a little differently, this is Are You From Dixie, and this is what I'd hope to have first, and yes, Are You From Dixie, Grandpa Jones, singing, and of course on the banjo.
Well, by the way, this next young fellow we have coming out here may not be so beautiful. Come to think of it, he may not be so young either. But he's a great entertainer, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy him just a whole lot. So how about a great big rousing welcome for Grandpa Jones?
Thank you, thank you very much. You know, Ernest, to look at him, you wouldn't think he is one of the finest
This is Grandpa Jones.
English students in the country, but I used to live down where he is at, and his teacher was so proud of him that every time that somebody would come in to visit the school, why, they'd get his class up in front of the little school and start asking them questions. Well, I went over there one day, and I sat down in the back of the school there, and of course the teacher got his class up right away and started asking them English questions. Come to Ernest, said, Ernest, get up there and tell us the difference between prose and poetry. Well, Ernest didn't know, and it sort of embarrassed the teacher, and she says, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll write some on the board. I'll write some prose, and then I'll write some poetry. So she wrote, there was an old woman that lived on a hill, and last week she moved to town. She says, that's prose because it doesn't rhyme. Then she wrote, there was an old woman lived on a hill, and if she's not dead, she's a living there still. She says, that's poetry because it does rhyme. Ernest says, I understand that all right. So the next morning she thought she'd catch him on it. She says, Ernest, get up there and tell us the difference between prose and poetry this morning. Ernest jumped up and he said, there was an old woman that lived by the well, and when she died, she went to what do you want, prose or poetry?
Are you from Tennessee or Maryland? Any place below the Mason-Dixon line?
they just don't make them like that anymore. That's Grandpa Jones. He passed away in 1994. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow, the same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm just hoping this feeds in. There we are.